Program. We also welcome our listeners on the Inception Radio Network, and we'll be monitoring the chat room there too. We welcome those who are joining us in our chat room, as well as those who are listening to the archive. Glad you could make it tonight. Tonight, we have with us returning Stanton Friedman, a veteran ufologist, an all-around nice guy and all that other stuff. We can build him up throughout the hour, I'm sure. He's going to be talking about his latest book, Science Was Wrong, as well as his other books, some other things, too. Some things in the news, as well as a trip he made to Saudi Arabia for a conference.
He's been all over the place lately, so yeah. Hopefully he can give us some information about some of those conferences he's at.
We're
going to
play Where's Stanton.
Yeah. So. Yeah. He's all over the globe.
Stan, welcome to Paranexus Universe, or welcome back.
Welcome back. Yeah, it's so nice to have you.
Glad to be on again. Yeah, I'm the traveling man, I guess you could say. But I'm home now, so what the heck.
Yeah. So, you been to the far side of the moon yet?
Not quite, but, it's really surprised me. I'm getting on. I've been at this. Gabe read my first book on UFOs 53 years ago, gave my first lecture 44 years ago. And I thought I'd be slowing down, but the interest seems to be high level, that is, from all over the place, just this year. I've been to Saudi Arabia, Riyadh. I was in Warsaw, Poland. Just got back, as a matter of fact, from near Sao Paulo, Brazil. I was out in Arizona for the International UFO Congress. I was down in Georgia for a conference, and the Oz conference in Lawrence, Kansas, and in future months I will be going to Roswell, of course, for the annual festival, and to Irvine for the MUFON 42nd annual MUFON symposium. I'll be in Burlington, Wisconsin, at the end of October. Where's all this? How did this happen? It looks
we
like
need to get we need to get a teletransporter for you, Stanton. So
that
just
would
like,
be neat.
You know, you can just like walking through one door into the next, and you'll be at your destination and back home the next night. That would be kind of terrific, wouldn't it?
Well, it would also be terrific if the other places would pay for business class. My Saudi Arabian trip, which is one of the more strange and interesting appearances I've ever made. I'm sure nobody's heard of it. There is stuff on YouTube, but the fifth annual Global Competitiveness Forum was held in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia in January. And I'd never heard of it before. When I got invited last year, I checked to see whether there really is something like a Saudi Arabian general investment agency, and there is, son of a gun. Mm-hmm. They asked me, I don't know whether it's a scam or not. And supposedly the theme, if you will, would be innovation. And my answer was the right one. I said, well, look, for many years my mantra has been technological progress comes from doing things differently in an unpredictable way. The future mm-hmm. is not an extrapolation of the past. You want to make progress, you got to change how you do things. Anyway, I was the first of the five panelists that participated in a panel called Contact with Outer Space. Hmm. Now, this conference is for not for everyday Joes like you and me. They charge $4,000 to
wow.
attend this conference.
Holy mackerel.
I better only get two tickets.
Yeah, the first keynote speaker was Bill Gates. The keynote speaker this year was Bill Clinton.
Wow.
And Tony Blair was there from England, and John Chrétien from Canada, and a whole bunch of top flight people, you know, the heads of Volkswagen and Boeing and Georgia Tech and a who's who of the big business world. I was really quite impressed. Sure, the price kept the normal people away, but what surprised me was that we get along real well. We had a panel, and they did us a favor. They had a lot of simultaneous sessions going on, but and there were between 800 and 1,000 people there, just depending
wow.
on the moment. And the weather was a lot warmer than it is in Frederick.
Mm-hmm. Well, I bet you.
It was in the 60s, I guess, and in Fredericton it was in the 10s.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing, not only did we have, were we the only game in town during our session, 75 minutes, but there were five of us there on this panel. And they've never had a panel on this subject before. And, you know, they're obviously taking it seriously, and we made PowerPoint, some of us made PowerPoint presentations. And the other people who will be familiar, some of them to your listeners, Nick Pope of England, for example,
mm-hmm.
and Dr. Jacques Vallée, who is
mm-hmm.
one of the people with the, he's got a foot in the investment camp and the UFO camp. He's got a new book out listing 500 sightings pre-1880, so you know they weren't airplanes, helicopters, et cetera.
Right.
Dr. Michio Kaku, the theoretical physicist from New York,
mm-hmm.
And an Arab scholar who quoted the Quran but indicated that, well, it doesn't prohibit there being aliens out there, but he didn't think they'd be coming here. And then there was me. And I was the only one of the five, admittedly, who started off by saying, I'm convinced the evidence is overwhelming that Earth is being visited by extraterrestrial spacecraft, that we're dealing with a cosmic Watergate, that if you want innovation, you go to somebody who's already accomplished it, so looking at the UFO data is a good idea. And I showed pictures, I wanted to shock them a little bit, a couple of nuclear fission rockets, 6 feet in diameter, power level of 4,400 megawatts, that's twice the power of Grand Coulee Dam. That's fairly impressive. This is not just a design. It worked on the ground. I also showed them, because, again, I didn't think any of them knew it, a nuclear-powered aircraft carrier which can operate for 18 years without
yeah.
refueling.
Uh-huh.
That's pretty unusual for most people. And I talked about fusion. And fusion is a key to our whole discussion because it's what goes on in all the stars in the universe, the billions and billions of stars. They're all fusing away. And that means if you learn how to control that, on the one hand, you can be a threat to your neighbors because of H-bombs. The first one we let off released the energy of 10 million tons of TNT. That's a 3-mile-wide fireball, incidentally. And it means if you use it appropriately, you can use it to kick a fusion rocket into outer space, giving particles 10 million times as much energy per particle as they can get in a dumb old chemical rocket.
Right, you get more yield.
So what that means is, you understand, that from an alien's viewpoint, a couple of things. We're a primitive society whose major activity is tribal warfare. Just look
yeah.
around. They only killed, 50 million people during World War II? A mere 50 million. We destroyed 1,700 cities. But it means that within 100 years, if we so choose, we could reach out and bother them, taking our brand of friendship. Everybody else.
distributing in other words, the wealth what, out to the universe.
Well, what nobody talks about, I think, you know, why don't they land on the White House lawn and why would they come here? And I suggested maybe it's the honeymoon capital of this corner of the galaxy, or this is the devil's island of this corner. They dumped all the bad boys and girls here, and that's why we're so nasty to each other. But the best reason for coming here, because we're a threat to them out there. Every advanced civilization is going to be wary of the primitives in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
Wait, look at how much money we spend on surveillance, on reconnaissance, call it what you want. One Pearl Harbor is enough, you know.
Yeah.
And so I pushed the notion that, you know, we got a real situation here. The world of the future is going to be different from the world of the past, and we could constructively look at the evidence we have about UFOs to develop new means of propulsion in the atmosphere, propulsion between the stars, how to withstand high G loadings, you know, all that other good stuff. And so I, in conversations the next 2 days, we were on Sunday and we didn't leave until Tuesday night.
Wow.
So there was time for, and we all ate our meals, different, sitting at different places every day, and different. It was very informal. I mean, kind of impressive. I'm talking to one guy at my table at lunch on one day there, and I said, he said he's an investment man. How much does your company invest? Oh, about $150 billion.
Wow.
That impressed me. I don't know about anybody else. But
yeah, we need to get him on the board at Paranexus. That's what we need.
Yeah, well, my point is this was a different conference. I talked to a lot of people, and frankly, there were a couple of strange moments. First, I told my relatives and friends I'm going to Saudi Arabia. What are you, crazy, Stan?
Yeah.
You know, you're Jewish. Have you forgotten? I said, no, I haven't forgotten. And so I wrote them a very polite note saying, I do want to make sure about something. I don't want to show up there and have somebody standing at the door saying, you can't come in. I am Jewish. Is that going to be a problem? Better to find out now than later. And they wrote back very politely saying, no, we've had many Jewish speakers. It's okay. And there wasn't a problem. There were many Arabs there. We got along well. And as in some of my conversations, pretty clear that they're well aware that Jews and Arabs are both Semites. They're cousins.
Mm-hmm.
You know, despite today's crazy attitudes, we had a golden age in Spain.
Absolutely.
In 1100. So it was almost like a family gathering. You know?
Yeah.
How did they react to your
very
to your...
well. I had a number of people say that, well, they hadn't realized the subject was going to be discussed, so it was kind of a surprise, but they enjoyed it. And I was surprised a number of people had seen me on television, History Channel and Discovery Channel, stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
Even somebody had seen me on Larry King, which, you know, so it made it less difficult to believe that I was some kind of a nut. And I think they had confidence in the management of the conference that they wouldn't bring in crazy people. And as a matter of fact, Bill Clinton, in his keynote address, mentioned three different high science new developments, and one of them was the discovery of an Earth-like planet out there. And
really?
What impact that might have. He left it hanging at that, but it was an interesting aside, so to speak. So the conference also, I asked afterward, after I got home, and anybody can go to YouTube and look at, if you look Global GCF, you can see all the speakers. It's only 75 minutes for five of us, so we didn't have much time. But I asked later, I said, look, when I was there, I got nice comments from people, but naturally, if they're going to say anything, they'll say something nice. What the heck? But if they weren't happy with the situation, I would expect they would talk to you guys, you know, the management, so to speak.
Uh-huh.
And so if they're, you know, I'd like to know what kind of response was there. It was a very popular event, is what I got told.
Mm,
very
good.
Good response. And maybe they'll do some more next year. I hope so. That's why I mentioned the business class, because it's a long way to Riyadh. So
I bet it is. Hey, Stan, I wanted to ask you something, you know, real quick about some recent news. And in your background is in nuclear physics. What is your take on the rumors that that are floating around about a Higgs boson particle being found?
The Higgs boson. Well, has it been found, or are people just hoping it's been found?
Well, there's been some rumors circulating recently that, you know, that they found some results that may indicate that they've detected it.
Well, I was talking to Michio Kaku, the theoretical astrophysicist, and, you know, we were talking about the fact that a lot of theoretical astrophysics is based on theory, string theory and so forth. Got no evidence to back it up, but he was saying, well, they're hopeful that sometime this year the Large Hadron Collider might turn up something. There's some experiments planned that might prove useful. And I think he was referring to the possible Higgs boson. So I think it'll excite a lot of astrophysicists. For the rest of us, I don't think it'll have much impact. You know, most people's everyday life does not revolve around advanced theoretical astrophysics.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, but, I mean, what is it? What is the significance? If it means
we're getting smarter. That's the, the only significance.
Okay.
Well, explain the significance of the God particle to our listeners.
The point is, it means that some of our theories about how the universe is concocted are true. Hey, victory for the good guys, you know. And nobody wants to start all over again. But we're in that limbo time where we haven't had the experimental evidence. And this isn't easy to measure. There's only one LHC, although there's another big accelerator where they may be looking to some extent. So it's a rare opportunity to test. It's kind of like way back in 1919. There was an eclipse expedition that went to Africa to measure the positions of stars when the sun was between us and them and when it wasn't. In other words, the light from the star had to go past the sun, and Einstein's theories had predicted that it would be bent. In other words, the position would be displaced. And that sounds crazy as heck, because what's gravity got to do with electromagnetic waves? Well, Einstein predicted it did have something to do with it, and it was, once they got the results out, it was heralded all over the world as, you know, real breakthrough. Hey, this relativity stuff has something to it. And relativity is weird. I mean, the time slows down as things move fast. You know, that is not intuitive. A big gravity field affects light, that's not intuitive either. But Einstein was right. So if we find the Higgs boson and it meets our expectations, that's two things that need to happen. It isn't enough to find it and say, yeah, but it doesn't match what we thought it would be. You know, our theory must not be right after all, you know.
Yeah, that would be
so
bad.
That's the kind of thing, and it would mean more funding for theoretical astrophysics, and funding is the name of the game here. You know, I mentioned when we talked beforehand about SETI, which has just announced that, gee, it doesn't have enough money to continue looking with the Hat Creek Observatory up in California. Paul Allen didn't give him another $30 million. He spent $50, as a matter of fact, in Chile on a big real telescope, not a radio telescope, an optical telescope. And so what this means is that there are a bunch of guys who are going to be out of work, having had very lucrative jobs that seem to be able to go on forever, the SETI Institute. They've excited mankind. As part of doing that, of course, they have to say, ain't nobody coming here. These flying saucers, that's a bunch of baloney. The only way we're going to find out about extraterrestrials is through reception of radio signals. Now, anybody who looks at that carefully says, wait a minute, what are you guys talking about? You're telling me that there are civilizations out there that are sending us signals using technology appropriate to us at this point in time, or when, how many ever years ago the signal was sent. I mean, if they're 60 light years away, so it's at least 60 years ago, and our technology has changed. So you're telling me they're sending us signals for no good reason at all, using technology appropriate to us, which certainly in 500 years is going to be one heck of a lot different than it is now, just as the the micro-integrated circuits are not the same as small vacuum tubes. It's an entirely different technology. And if you listen for FM signals, you ain't going to pick up AM ones, you know. But anyway, they're complaining that, gee, they don't have enough money, and they're going to have to put the 30-some dishes out there in sort of not cold storage exactly, but they'll be in mothballs, so to speak.
There's a possibility the Air Force is going to contract with them?
Well, they're trying to say that, to look at debris and interactions with... They came up with that as, God, what can we do with these things if we can't listen for signals from outer space? And I think it's a desperate attempt. The Air Force has got plenty of good receivers of its own dedicated to their needs. And in addition, the Air Force can look from outer space, at least from in orbit, which means it's a much better place to look from than on the ground. If you think about that, you know,
definitely.
A satellite goes over the Earth every 90 minutes. It goes around the Earth once. So it's got a heck of a field of view, and the telescope on the ground doesn't have that field of view. You might notice it takes 24 hours to go around.
Yeah.
Rotate once a day. So I think they're reaching for straws, and they might find somebody. And again, money plays a role here in an entirely different way. They got $30 million or so from Paul Allen. He's one of the founders of Microsoft. He made money by donating money because he had stock which had greatly increased in value. If he sold the stock, he'd have to pay tax on the difference between what it was worth when he first got it and what it's worth now, which, as you can imagine, Microsoft stock is... worth a heck of a lot more than it was when he got it. By giving it away, he gets the full value of the gift as a donation, and so he saves money. And so that's one of the things, if they go to other possible donors, it's a card to play. Look, you're going to have to pay an awful lot of tax on the stock you would otherwise give us, or, you know, give us and we can sell and so forth and so on. So there are financial aspects of this. And there were some quick numbers in one of the articles. I read about five different articles, and it mentioned the budget, and it sounded like the average guy working there was making well over $100,000 a year. Well, that's a pretty good wage, more than I make. I don't know about you guys.
Yeah.
A little bit more.
Yep. Yeah.
There's there's one other thing going on that we need to take into account. Big fuss about the FBI and the NSA putting stuff on their websites. And, wow, look at that FBI memo about crash saucers in New Mexico. And I had 50 people, Stan, they're saying that a saucer crashed at Roswell. No, they're not. And that FBI memo was released in 1977, a little while back anyway. The kicker there is, and what people forget, the same thing happened in England and in France and several other countries. The Freedom of Information Act is new in those other countries. It's not new here, but one of the most popular subjects for requests for information from the DOD in England, for example, was UFOs, and they were sick and tired of spending all their time filling these requests. So the easy thing to do is to post them on a website, have people be able to go to the website and look at what's there and download it themselves and not bother them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the same thing. The NSA released some stuff that's dozens of years old, but interestingly enough, that's National Security Agency. You notice that they didn't release the 156 NSA UFO documents which were discovered in 1980 or so and were finally released, sort of, in 1996. You can read one or two lines per page. These were top secret Umbra documents. Those aren't mentioned in this fuss about the NSA. They don't want to admit that they're withholding more than 90% of what's on each page.
Right.
And they're saying, "Oh no, we're the nice guys. Look what we're releasing." And the FBI, I noticed, released a copy of the MJ-12 documents of the Eisenhower briefing memo, anyway, which has the word "bogus" written, handwritten, and letters an inch high scrawled across the page. Now that comes directly from Colonel Weaver, who put out the big anti-Roswell report. He wrote that and gave that to the FBI. Bogus! And he sent a copy to Nick Redfern in England. He now lives in Texas. And Nick sent me a copy, and you can see that it's exactly the copy that the FBI has on their file. Now, when I filed a Freedom of Information Act request for the basis for that declaration, to a foreigner, no less, all memos, documents, et cetera, leading to that conclusion, we have nothing in response to your request.
Hmm.
So they didn't tell anybody. They just make it up as they go along. So
There's
a lot of misrepresentation going on here, and people should be aware of that.
Let's
don't get excited by the government.
No, absolutely not.
Let's mention anyway your new book, Science Was Wrong. It's got a lot of interesting stuff. I've read it nearly twice. I read all your books more than once. And
well, that's good. Well, there are two authors after all. Kathleen Martin and I each wrote 7 of the 14 chapters. And we cover a lot of ground, and there probably someday should be a volume 2. Basically what it is smart people saying stupid things that's in the way of progress. Well, the guy who said that flight, the greatest astronomer of the 19th century, Simon Newcomb, in a public statement said that for sure men would never fly in a vehicle. And that was 2 months before the Wright brothers' first flight. He didn't know anything about flight, but it didn't stop him from making a stupid comment. And the trouble with comments like that is they get in the way of funding for people who do have ideas and are pursuing new ways of doing things. The British Astronomer Royal in 1956, a year before Sputnik, said space travel is utter bilge. Nobody ever spent the money to do it. Make much more sense to invest in good equipment for astronomers. And, of course, no field has benefited more from the space age than astronomy. So we have many examples of this.
Well,
and in medicine, for example, we have several examples of where it costs people's lives. One of my favorite guys is Dr. Semmelweis, Ignaz Semmelweis, who was working delivering babies in a huge hospital in Vienna and found that babies delivered by midwives, the mothers, this is in the early 1800s, 1830, 1840, that time frame, the mothers, only 3% of them developed bad fever, childbed fever, they called it. The babies delivered by doctors was 20%. And he did a lot of investigations, ran a lot of experiments, did a lot of work. Anyway, he found that the problem was that they were doing autopsies upstairs, coming down and examining women and delivering babies without washing their hands.
Yeah,
the mark of a good doctor was how bloody your apron was. So he established new procedures, definite rules, how to use a strong soap and a nail brush and stuff like that, and cut the percentage from 20 to 3 again. However, the head of the hospital said, that's not the way we do things here, and forced Dr. Semmelweis out, and they went back to the old way, with hundreds, if not thousands, of women dying, and the babies too, because of this pig-headed smart guy. Now, admittedly, eventually they put out a postage stamp in Semmelweis's honor.
100 years after he was gone.
Yeah. That's the way things are, you know. Yep. And we have one chapter on UFOs, and Kathy did a fine chapter on abductions. And she also did one on the paranormal, noting that all kinds of published papers and refereed scientific journals showed that there was an effect. We call it telepathy and a bunch of other so-called paranormal things. But the National Science Academy just brushed it aside and ignored it, misrepresented things and so forth. And, you know, you wonder how much are we losing because we don't encourage the people. There was a woman named Demkina, a Russian, who could sort of diagnose by looking at a person and seeing what was going on in the body. It sounds
right.
Crazy. But she had demonstrated this over and over again in Russia, and she was brought to the United States, and it was supposedly being tested by three real experts. Turns out they were debunkers who weren't experts at all, except at being nasty, and they pulled some fast ones. And when other people went over the experiments, we quote a Nobel Prize winner as saying that the data shows she was on. She was right. So we have to keep our eyes open in many different areas. Well, one example, the hemophilia Holocaust. We have a chapter on that. When HIV, we became aware of HIV, you know, which is not a fast disease to act. You don't get it today and die tomorrow kind of thing. So it takes a while to realize what's going on. Anyway, one guy with the Center for Disease Control was saying we got to be careful of the blood supply when they found it was being transmitted by gay stewards and so forth. And hemophiliacs asked, should we continue to be taking the life-saving factor, the concentrate that we've been using for years? And his answer was, the chance of getting HIV from a transfusion is 1 in a million.
Right.
Well, he was slightly off. 10,000 American hemophiliacs were made HIV positive by the
contaminated blood
saving stuff.
Yep.
And the Germans had already shown years before that heat treatment would get rid of viruses. They were looking at hepatitis because we didn't have any HIV at the time. But the American companies said, hey, that costs too much. We can't do that.
Well, you know, that's really a sad commentary, though. It really is. I mean, and I've often wondered, and I'm sure you guys have, what is it going to take to push us out of one paradigm? You know, I mean, how, you know, it happens, but it just seems like they're just so clinging to orthodoxy.
Yes.
And not wanting ever to change. I mean, it just
it's fascinating. And the thing is that, you know, I've mentioned a couple of medical examples. There are a bunch of others. There were people who fought vaccination to prevent smallpox.
Yeah.
There were cartoons of people with cow udders and so forth because they were using cowpox pustules to provide something to people to protect them. And it was a vicious campaign, and certain religious leaders. Well, smallpox is God's way of controlling a population.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thanks a lot. You know?
Yeah. Well, as long as it doesn't hit their family or their folks. Yeah, their flock. Yeah, it's really a sad state. And, you know, like I said, it really makes me wonder. I mean, look, it seems to me, you know, and Stanton and you and I and Doug have been around the block a few times. We've been looking into this whole thing for many, many years now. And it seems to me that the evidence is mounting day by day. It's obvious to so many people that we're not alone in the universe.
Right.
And yet we still maintain the status quo that UFOs are laughable, that nobody would visit us, that the distances
landing on the White House lawn now,
right.
Of course.
It's same old junk we've been hearing for 50 years. When we
60,
know
60,
yeah.
Please.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Stan.
Yeah.
I
don't know what it'll take. We're all working at it. Some of us are working at it anyway. And I take the kind of invitations I've had, the response I get. We had a full house in Warsaw, Poland. We had a very good crowd in Brazil, just outside Sao Paulo. The International UFO Congress in Phoenix, most successful they've had so far. You know, big crowds, enthusiastic people, good sales at the in the vendors' room and stuff like that. And it'll be interesting to see. Now, I just read an announcement that unfortunately the Roswell Museum, which had planned, UFO Museum, which had planned to expand, they own the land downtown, but they're being slowed about building a new facility, which would cost about $14 million. They have had to delay the ground, you know, the real getting into construction. They've got the plans, but they just announced that they're going to have to put off the start. And that's kind of sad, but I'm hoping we'll have a very good crowd in Roswell. That's the first 3 days, 4 days of July. And I'll be speaking, and Kathleen Martin, my co-author on not only Science Was Wrong, but on Captured, the Betty and Barney Hill UFO Experience. She'll be speaking down there, and Don Schmidt will be there. And, oh, I better mention, that's something I'm looking forward to, he says optimistically at this moment. Right. Darn, I may change my mind a year from now. But the movie will be entitled Magic Men, M-A-J-I-C. And it's Bryce Zabel, who did Dark Skies. Remember that show?
Yeah, that was a good show, yeah.
Well, Bryce is a Hollywood big wheel, if you will, and he's working on the screenplay right now for Magic Men, and they bought the rights, his company, with Donnie Most. Remember him from Happy Days?
Happy Days.
So he's been working on movie production, too. They bought the rights to my life, to Don Schmidt's life. He's a noted Roswell researcher, and the rights to his book, Witness to Roswell, and my book, Top Secret Magic, second edition from 2005. And we're going to make, we understand, you never know about Hollywood, but Bryce is really knowledgeable, and so I'm optimistic. We're going to make a movie that'll be a combination of all the President's Men and JFK, and hopefully starring Richard Dreyfuss as Stanton Friedman.
All right,
You're better looking, Stan. We know the truth.
All right, well, we've got a ton of questions that I need to get in here.
I'll give you short answers.
Yes, please, and we can get them all in. I'm going to give me a moment to go back up to the beginning here. I wasn't quite prepared because
you want to start at the beginning. What kind of
I know it doesn't make logical sense, but there's one in here that it's scrolled up about James Norton, Fort Benning. Any discussion, quick discussion on that?
Well, I've talked to him, I've talked to people who are checking on it. He's in the military, he supposedly has wreckage related to Roswell that he's sort of buried in his backyard, and he wants to get it to, it supposedly has peculiar properties. A lot of people interested in that story, and yet he's been sat on by the military, which doesn't surprise me at all. I was shocked when that story went public, and you don't go public with something like that until you have the test proving you know, that the stuff is weird, not from this planet. And that hadn't been done. Nobody else has seen it. So it leaves a big question mark. Does this stuff exist? I mean, he's a real person. I've talked to him. But does he have this material? Nobody has seen it. Until it gets analyzed, there's nothing to go on.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really in my gray basket at this moment. I mean, I hope something good comes out of it, but no guarantee.
All right, here's a question. Any luck in further research in the Virginia alien case? I'm not familiar with that.
That's one where there was a picture, I believe. And no, not that I know of anyway. Sorry.
Okay, and a follow-up or an additional question. Do you think the marketing of alien movies like Men in Black and Space Jam and could we even say Magic Men help produce an environment where aliens are looked at as stuff of fiction?
Or no, I think they get people more interested on... You know, I hate to admit it, as the author of five books, and they're all listed at my website, www.stantonfriedman.com, but a heck of a lot more people watch movies than read books, sad as that may be for us authors. You know? So I think movies that are properly done, Close Encounters got a lot of people interested, and one of the key things that I found wherever I go is that most people are comforted by the fact that they're not the only ones who have seen a UFO, they're not the only ones who are interested in them. Everybody's afraid to speak out because they think I was some kind of a nut. Well, if you look at my audiences, you know, hey, it's okay. So a good movie can do a lot of good in getting facts out there and data out there in a palatable format. You know what I mean? That people can understand. Like in the case of Don and I, we both had stumbles along the way in our research. We both worked with people we're no longer working with. We ran into obstacles from the government. You know, it's a search like all the president's men. But you don't hear people saying, oh, governments must tell the truth. I saw that stupid movie, All the President's Men, and, you know, Watergate, that's a myth. Quite the contrary, I think. It wakens people. The most common response I get in when I answer a number of the questions that people have after my lectures, and most of them are the why questions, you know, why would aliens come here? Why would the government not tell us what it knows? Why don't they land on the White House lawn? You know, this kind of stuff. Most of the responses are along the lines, oh, I hadn't thought of that before. Thanks. That's the general feeling. I've been forced to think about these things. After you've answered your first 50,000 questions, you better have some thought up there.
All right, here's another.
I'll tell you tomorrow.
Here's another question. What would you think about ufology putting on a series of great debates in order to reduce the giggle factor?
Well, I'd love to do that. I've been in several debates. I was at the Oxford University Debating Society, and my partner and I won a debate. This house believes that aliens have visited planet Earth, something like that. We won. I've done two debates on Coast to Coast Radio, one with Seth Shostak. I only got 57% of the vote. He got 33%, and 10% said, I don't know. I also had a debate with Dr. Michael Shermer. He's with the Skeptic Society, who knows nothing at all about the subject, and that showed up in the results. I got 80% of the vote there. And there's a debate that we didn't take a vote at, unfortunately, at Middle Tennessee State University. This is listed on my website, www.stantonfriedman.com. Are flying saucers real? It was a formal debate. We had a moderator. We each spoke for so many minutes and, you know, rebuttals and the whole business. And the people who watched the tape, the DVD, sorry, tape is old-fashioned. We don't have DVDs anymore. Have said that I clobbered them, but I'll let anybody who gets it decide for themselves. So a series I'd love to debate. Another guy I'd like to debate is Dr. Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Yeah.
He's at the Hayden Planetarium.
Oh, yeah.
And let me give you two examples of his skill. On the Peter Jennings mockumentary of February 24th, 2005, he said, our Viking spacecraft, our fastest craft, will take 70,000 years to get to the nearest star. Obviously, scientists want their data before that. He didn't tell you that it has no propulsion system on it. It's like throwing a bottle in the ocean and saying that tells you how long it takes to cross the ocean, which is absurd. He also said, just a couple of weeks ago at Penn State University, he was saying, governments can't keep secrets. Look how much we know about President Clinton's genitalia.
God.
Now, if you can follow a good sense of that, you know, since when did the NSA, DIA, CIA, ONI, NRO have any secrecy involving such activities? it's a dumb thing to say.
Yes.
And so I'd love to debate him, and I've written a column in which I challenge that. I have a monthly column in the MUFON Journal, and I'm hopefully, if nobody else does, I'll send him a copy and see if I can wake him up. But I also tried to appear on Coast to Coast with Paul Davies, outstanding astrophysicist from the University of Arizona, who has said some dumb things about UFOs and outer space and so forth. And, you know, so I'd be happy to have a series of debates. Have ideas, we'll travel.
Mm-hmm. All right, here's another question. Do you think the Kecksburg Acorn, quote-unquote, was possibly a U.S.-built craft based on Nazi technology or something else?
No, I think it was an alien spacecraft. Yes, mm-hmm. It looked a bit like the Russian, one of the Russian reentry vehicles, but even they have said it wasn't ours. Timing is wrong, place is wrong.
Okay. Anything, one person wants to know if there's any special cases that researchers will be working on this summer.
I don't know. I don't know. I'll probably hear about them as we go along. There's a couple of new books that people have told me they're almost finished with and will be sending me copies. So I don't want to say anything because not only do I not remember the names, but there's many a slip between the claim of a book and its appearing in print.
All right, so let me check the other chat room. Do you have any events tentatively planned to happen in either Ontario or Michigan?
There's supposed to be something in Michigan in August, second week, I believe, in August, up in the Upper Peninsula. And it's not on my website yet because I don't have the full information. My website, www.stantonfriedman.com, lists my future schedule. And I won't be close, but I'll be in Newfoundland. That'll be my 10th Canadian province. That'll mean all 50 states and all 10 Canadian provinces.
All right.
Cool.
Bravo.
All right. I think that's so far the end of those questions that I've got so far.
Yeah,
so if I missed one, put it back in the chat room because, you know, it scrolls off the page and I can't copy and paste the questions in the IRN chat.
Yeah, so we're not neglecting you or intentionally.
Got to work them in.
Yep.
All right, a couple of other things in your book, Science Was Wrong. I just want to state this for the benefit of our audience, too, and here's a testimonial. I mean, the book is excellent, and one of the things that I love about Stanton's books are that it's, you know, zero BS. It's, you know, tell it like it is. This is, and I love that, Stan, about you, that it's so grounded, it's so reasonable, it's so rational, and it's so damn obvious, or it should be, you know. And I love that because it's great. I mean, I've told you before, I've always had enormous confidence in you after first seeing you on documentaries, Jeepers, years and years and years and years ago.
Don't remind me.
Yeah, okay. Well, a couple of years ago. Anyway. And so I love that. One of the things that, and it's not really a big thing, and I don't want to spend a lot of time on it, but it's global warming. You know, I've always had a problem with global warming. I frankly thought it was BS. I just thought it was.
You were right.
And then I come across a chapter in your book on global warming. I'm thinking, this is it, man. This is why I thought it was BS. So if you want to learn more about why global warming is BS, then be sure and get Stan's book, Science Was Wrong.
Yeah, now I should stress to people, the question is whether man is responsible for changes in
right.
the climate.
Yeah.
And the answer is no. Does climate change? You darn right it does, of course. you know, the temperature is different every day. There was snow last night in northern New Brunswick. Well, that's not normal, but that's global warming, I suppose. The question is whether evil CO2 is responsible. And, you know, the global warmers don't even tell you that CO2 isn't the biggest greenhouse gas at all. Water vapor is, and it's much, much harder to predict. CO2 is not evil, and there's no point in spending hundreds of billions, and I'm not kidding when I say that, that some of the people want us to spend to give to the poor countries of the world because we rich countries are evil and we're using fossil fuels and we're putting out all this CO2, and isn't that terrible? And, you know, you may not, I don't like dirty coal and all the rest of that. I'm a pro-nuclear guy, but that isn't the point. The point is whether it is man's behavior that is changing the climate. And more data since the book was published show that that simply isn't the case. There are natural phenomena within the solar system, within the sun, and our atmosphere combined that are responsible. And, you know, it's not getting hotter. And there's been a lot of lies because, you know, go back to what I said about the SETI people. The IPCC are guys with cushy jobs, government funding. They're playing games with theories, and they'd be tough out of luck if it turns out they're not right. And the more scare they can put into us, and no, we're not losing polar bears, and islands aren't being swamped, and, you know, things change. Oh, boy, do they change. But let's not blame man for it.
Right.
We should be using good sense on how we use our energy.
It's another way to whip up fear, and fear, you know, all boils down to control. And I also think that, you know, you hit the nail on the head. It's a way for people to make a lot of money. There's a way for them, and you know, it just seems like it's so out of whack now that you can control people's behavior by making them afraid, and that seems to be a successful technique, you know, and it's really unfortunate.
Well, pretty soon we'll be painting all aliens as evil and shoot them first before
questions. Who was it? Wasn't it the report from Iron Mountain or something where they talked about eventually that is indeed what would happen? That, you know,
we'd have
something bigger and larger than, you know, the Al-Qaeda, and it would have to be a distraction from, you know, like something that's off-planet in order for us to unite as humanity. That'd be the quickest way for us to unite, but please. But I, you know, who knows?
All right, we've got about 8 or 9 minutes left, and one of the things in your book, Science Was Wrong, Stan, is obviously about abductions, and of course you reiterate some on the Betty and Barney Hill story, and so on and so forth. And one of the things that I really appreciate in your wording is that there's essentially, and I'm paraphrasing, there's no doubt that some, and you italicize that, some abductions are genuine.
Yes.
What I would like to ask or get your input on is when you look at the world of abductions, so to speak, the you know, so many people claiming, and obviously what some researchers have concluded or contributed to, the Roper poll and so forth, that literally millions of people are being abducted. You know, what's your general view on how are we to view abductions, you know,
well,
in a rational way?
Carefully, I guess, is the first word I would say. The notion, run right out and hypnotize them, is pretty stupid.
Yeah.
About at least 30% are remembered without hypnosis. Secondly, if you're going to do hypnosis, it should be as close as possible to the quality of what Dr. Benjamin Simon did with Betty and Barney Hill.
Yep.
Now, here was a guy who had demonstrated his competence by treating literally thousands of shell shock war veterans from World War II. He ran a hospital that had 3,000 beds. He did the Army movie, Let There Be Light.
Yeah, he got results, too, with his work.
That was the point. He got results. He wasn't able to cure, if you will, everybody, but he certainly put an awful lot of good men back to humanity, if you will. And he didn't know anything about flying saucers, and he was not in battle, but he knew how to help people relive the experience, induce amnesia after each hypnosis session, and gradually get it back into them. And so when you get somebody like that, instead of somebody who has an agenda, that's when you're going to get results. And the Roper poll was missing a couple of things, false positives and false negatives. They asked like five questions, and if you answered three of them, then you must have been abducted. They didn't allow for the people who hadn't been abducted and answered the same way to those three, or the other way, people who had been abducted and didn't answer those. And without, you know, the false positives and false negatives, you don't have really good picture of what's going on. And we're talking small percentages to begin with. There's a big difference between 1% and 3% of millions of people. So I think it overestimated them. And certainly it's an area where people want to please the hypnotist. We've had phony people. Somebody reported that she'd been abducted to John Mack, and he, you know, took her in the group and so forth. When she had made it all up, thanks to the influence of somebody who worked with Philip Klass, of all people.
Really?
Amazing.
Yeah, we're doing some research on him, and his behind-the-scene hands are bloodied, so to speak, with some of the really nasty stuff he did. If you go to the FBI file, which is on the Internet, on Phil Klass, you'll see that he made charges against Dr. J. Allen Hynek. He's incompetent. He's not a professional. You shouldn't, to the FBI, you shouldn't have let him publish an article in your magazine, and I'll be happy to provide one for you. Fortunately, the FBI recognized that he was talking through his hat, and they had caught him releasing classified data, and they couldn't prosecute him because they'd have to expose the classified data. So they didn't like him, and they set up for Hynek. But that was just one of a number of really nasty things that he did. And we're just beginning to dig those out.
And well, whose pocket was he in?
What?
Whose pocket was he in? Because I
that's
mean,
a very good question, and I really don't know. We remember the Church hearings back in the 70s. He was a Senator Church who found that the CIA had, co-opted loads of journalists. Now, I don't know whether they were paying them or not, but if they went overseas, they were interrogated when they came back or sometimes before they went. Here's what we want to know. Here's what we want to see. And Phil was in a great position. He could attend conferences because he worked for Aviation Week and Space Technology. So he would certainly be a good guy to ask which of our guys was saying things he shouldn't have.
And it's certainly been a good cover for him, that's for sure.
Yeah, and so maybe it was quid pro quo, you know, I'll expose all that, and you guys want this UFO stuff kiboshed? Oh, easy enough when you're sitting in Washington and you're the go-to man by somebody who needs a noisy negativist. You know, like Bill Nye, the science guy.
Yeah. All right, so in your quick opinion, how would you characterize the vast majority of abductions? Are the most of them just not real, or can they be attributable to other things? Or,
well, I think many of them are real, but I'd say less than half. How's that?
Sounds good. All right, we're running out of time.
That's a good enough percentage to be exciting.
Yeah, it is. All right, so we're down to about a minute or so.
Website is stanfriedman.com. Five books listed therein: Science Was Wrong, Captured the Betty and Barney Hill UFO Experience, Top Secret Magic, Crash at Corona, The Definitive Study of the Roswell Incident, and Flying Saucers and Science.
Yeah, another great
all your
book.
Scientific.
Well, you know what? We could talk forever, and it's always fascinating to have you on the program, and we really appreciate you taking the time for us tonight.
Yeah, it's always
my
a pleasure,
pleasure.
Stan.
And we
my pleasure,
our
guys.
Audience
Let's do
to
it
go.
Again.
Yeah.
Absolutely. We'd love to have you back.
We'd like to encourage our audience, our members, to go pick up the books, too, because they are good, and they're grounded, and they're rational, and they make sense. So do that. We appreciate everybody's questions. If I missed a question, I apologize. I try to get to all of them. Appreciate everybody joining us for this live broadcast on the Inception Radio Network, as well as on Blog Talk Radio, and we appreciate those who are listening to the archive version. Please join us again next week. can't quite remember who we've got on, but we've got the, oh, it's on
Crop Circles, right?
No, that's the week after. It's on Conducting Historical Research. So there should be some good.
Oh, that would be a good show. Yeah, that would be interesting.
Anyway, well, everybody visit
www.org
and join us there. Again, thanks to Stan. Thanks to everybody. We're out of time. Have a great week.
Have a great weekend, folks.
Good night.
Good night.
Take it easy. Good night.